Good to go. Okay. So hi, everyone. Welcome to Tech Ed. Hopefully you know you're here. That's me, sort of. It's the best I could do on Xbox. So my name is Jeff Stokes, and I blog under the pseudonym Dude, Where's My PFE? PFE is Premier Field Engineer. Basically, if you pay a contract, you can get access to engineers that do break fix and do training and things like that. So that's what I am. I've been doing that about 4 or 5 years, and I've done a lot of stuff, but you know. The real thing I'm here to talk to you about is hip hop. I am way into old school, as you can tell. And Star Wars, yeah, Star Wars, yeah, absolutely. And you know, on the internet, you can take any two things and you can combine them, oh yeah. Anyone heard that song? It's an oldie but a goodie. But you know, we're not here to talk about my pastimes and hobbies. We're here to talk about optimizing Windows 8 for VDI. And Doug Clicquot, right? Close enough?
That'll
work. And myself are here to basically talk about some things that we do in the field, some problems that we've seen, some configuration ideas that we have, some troubleshooting tips. One of the things I like to do is look at vetting out things before we roll it into production, do some UAT, and how do we trace that, and we'll get into that as well. But for now, I'm going to turn it over to Doug.
Great.
Here you go.
Thanks.
Here's the clicker.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yes, sir.
So a little bit of context here. You may have already attended a different session by Mikhail earlier the week, and the topic there was around how to optimize your Windows image for VDI. And we certainly have a couple content details around that to build on that topic and to extend a little further, kind of a 200-level content. But we're really going to focus around the performance assessment itself. So, you know, in as much as you can spend all the time in the world to build out the perfect image to sit inside of the VDI environment, it's until you actually get into these performance testing tools and approaches that you get to see what's actually going on. And you get to see real numbers, you get to see what the end user is actually seeing. So we'll go through that guidance briefly, and then we'll talk heavily about the performance testing component itself. But maybe we start on the first topic, which is, well, why are we talking about putting Windows 8 in VDI? I mean, what's wrong with Windows 7? Gosh, if you could, I'd love to run Windows XP and Windows Server 2012 VDI just because I don't have to deal with compatibility issues or whatever the topic may be. So it comes down to a couple things. One, the world is certainly moving into a tablet world. And so being able to accommodate touch is a huge interface concern for VDI. So now I've got my iPad, I've got my Google device, I've got my whatever tablet, but I want to be able to present to them a corporate-managed Windows desktop image, and in the case of Windows 8, I've got the ability to extend that with RDP. Performance is certainly one that we don't want to overlook. There are significant performance and some security improvements as well around Windows 8, but inside of VDI, that's certainly important as well. Modern applications, being able to present the modern applications, or if you're still in the mode of calling them Metro, which is a no-no inside of Microsoft. So the modern applications is something that you'll see more vendor-provided and or internally developed in the future to accommodate these tablet form factors. Now that you've all got either a Windows RT device or a Windows Pro device, unless you're selling it on eBay, you'll be able to take advantage of that and see that interface and accommodations. And finally, it's the user experience. So much has been said about whether or not there's a start button and if there's a lack of start button and, hey, maybe it's coming back in 8.1. All of that aside, there's a lot to be said for the improvements in user experience around Windows 8. So let's talk about the guidance here briefly. There's been some of the conversations that I have with customers. So in my role as a solution architect, I meet with customers to help them plan out a project around Windows deployment, whether that's virtual desktop or physical desktops. And a lot of times there's a question about, well, should I be using Pro or Enterprise? And certainly there's the 32 to 64-bit, which is equally as important to discuss. But it's very clear here, and what we make clear from the product team is that Enterprise is your key product of choice for running inside of the virtual environment. And it's spelled out here, and there's a blog that you can pick up later that highlights why. But really, it's all about some of the enhanced features and compatibility components that work with Virtual Server 2012. So please keep that in mind when you're planning this out. If you're not already down that path one way or the other with your Windows 7 and planning for Windows 8, keep that in mind. Secondly, we talk about memory allocation. So much has been done, much has been said by VMware or Citrix or other vendors about what to do with memory. Now, of course, we're going to tell you what to do on top of the Hyper-V environment with fair share and memory sharing, but keep in mind that the amount of footprint that you allocate to a virtual machine will dynamically change during the course of usage. So here are recommendations. And then this is not something we just threw up on the sheet and said, yeah, this looks good on a slide. We've got hard data as well as performance specs to back this up. So minimally, I wouldn't go any less than 1 gig, although I have seen customers use 512. Usually what happens in that scenario is you get 512 immediately, and then it bumps up to that 1 gig, 1.5 gig range fairly quickly once you start using applications. Certainly the topic of blade servers is one. So working with a large corporate bank, they have traders on the stock exchange, and they've dedicated blades to individual stock traders so that they don't have to worry about outage and or performance issues. So here's the comparison of 32 versus 64, and I just want to briefly say that what you're seeing here is the same machine with the same configuration, so there's very little difference in a steady state operation of a virtual machine 32 versus 64. So the question is, well, why would I choose 32 over 64 or 64 over 32? And the immediate answer is, if you've done all of your compatibility work on 64, then don't try and put in 32 in your virtual environment. However, if you've done all your work on both, then you might consider one or the other more prominently. There's some disk issues and disk partitioning issues to consider. So if you're going out and building your Windows template, or Windows 8 template in this case, you're going to get that wonderful BitLocker partition, which is unusable inside of a virtual environment. And so we recommend that we consider using MDT as your deployment solution for creating that image. We've got some guidance and direction that will be available for you to show you how to do that. We've got Jeff's script that will be able to walk you through some of the changes to be made to that virtual machine. But what you're seeing here is that once you build that image out, if you use that do not create extra partition option inside of MDT, you're going to get a flat disk, and that'll be nice and clean for the environment, but then it also won't be that extra 350 megabytes in that disk floating around for each machine that you've got started up in vDisks. Or of course, you could use scripted disk part commands. Oops. Number of virtual processors. So as we talk about virtual processors, we want to briefly cover the topic of vGPUs, which is a new feature or new capability, and enhanced capability, and we also want to talk about DirectX. So if you're using high-end servers for your virtual environment, you may or may not have a high-end video card to use inside of that. Depending on the usage, depending on the scenarios for how you're using those virtual desktops, you may consider using or dedicating virtual GPU to those machines. Again, this is Hyper-V specific and Hyper-V 2012 specific. So the fair share component comes into play here as well. And what fair share does in this particular case is it really accommodates the usage of those virtual GPUs effectively so that you're not in a situation where you've over or under allocated capacity to individual users and user machines. So let's talk briefly about GPUs in DirectX 11. There's a list of approved GPUs following that link. As of last week, there are 6 NVIDIA cards that support remote FX today. I expect that to change and to grow. There are dedicated hardware appliances being considered as well. Make certain that when you set up your VDI environment, if you're using the native Microsoft RDVH and RDSH, that you're running on SLAT equipment, which these days you can't buy anything other than SLAT. So you want to make certain that you've got that if you're using some older equipment, perhaps in a lab, because that will impact performance drastically. The VDI guess must use the WDDM driver for video. And we need to be able to enable that remote FX. So what does that look like? So if you go into your Hyper-V settings on your virtual host server, you'll see the nice little checkbox that says use this GPU with remote FX. And so once you've got the right video driver loaded, you drop in that checkbox, and you're good to go. You can now use vGPU across the virtual machines that you have. So there are two direct options. Either you can use processing to represent GPU, or you can use a software-emulated version of GPU. So in the DirectX model, CPU-emulated, rather. So if we have the VGPU capabilities or the CPU-emulated capabilities, the benefits and or options to consider are here. And I don't want to go into any more detail than to say, when, if at all possible, dedicate graphics cards to your virtual environment for those that are going to be using high-end graphics or watching movies or watching dedicated video across the corporate network. One last point here on virtual machines and or presentations across multiple screens. The specs have greatly increased for using Windows 8 with virtual desktops to be able to support multiple monitors and higher screen resolution as well. So you see that 2560 by 1600, that's a really nice sweet spot beyond the 1920 that we have today, and you'll expect to see that come out with hardware vendors both in laptops and in desktop video screens as well. So here are a few details of content that Jeff has worked on things to change, and I'll turn it over to him to take here and to move forward into some of the performance analysis.
Thanks. So some of these are pretty self-explanatory, but you want to look at the configuration style that you use in a virtualized environment for, you know, virtual desktops. It depends, and it depends, and it depends, based on the usage. Are you in a military environment, you know, where you need to keep all these security logs? Yes. Okay, then don't shrink them down to 1 meg and overwrite as needed, right? So, you know, you just need to apply some logic and reasoning to, you know, the recommendations. But what we've done is we've created a script for Windows 7 and for Windows 8 that will optimize the machine to make it the best possible guest for a virtualized environment that we could come up with and still be supported. There are some vendors that would recommend you do things like disable ASLR, address space layer randomization, right? That's the thing that makes sure that parts of Windows kernel don't load in the same memory space each time the machine boots. That's a little bit of a security concern, turning that off. Now, what they get for that is they can dedupe the memory in kernel, so that's how they get away with their increased density. But you need to understand that you're buying into the idea that you're not going to have those direct lib attacks. Right. Another thing is one of the vendors that does VDI a lot would recommend that you disable the firewall service in the service manager, or, you know, disable it in your build. That's actually an unsupported configuration where if you have networking problems, the very first thing that's going to happen is they're going to see that in the report, because we have automated things that when you upload data, they generate reports and tell us, you know, easy things to look for. And that's going to be the first thing they see is, why is this service disabled? The reason for that is partly that we didn't test every single application on the planet with that service disabled, so we don't know what happens. Secondly, that, yeah?
So is your recommendation going to come on with a recommendation instead of it?
Yeah. So, like, if you're running, like, third-party antivirus, something like that, the idea would be that you leave the service running, and this is in TechNet, you leave the service running, but the third-party antivirus or firewall product will set those profiles off and turn off the scanning features or whatever is being done. If you shut off that feature or shut off the service directly, you're actually looking at breaking some IPsec. I've had customers that have turned it off and can't RDP into the machine anymore, which is pretty inconvenient in VDI, right? So, you know, there's things to kind of look for, you know, but it's unexpected, right? Is perfect, is absolutely perfect. It does exactly what you want it to do. Yes, disabling the profiles, and you can do that with group policy, right? The hard disk timeouts, increasing the I/O, disabling the last access timestamp. Generally, people don't need to know when the last time you read ntloader.dll or what have you. It's more of when the thing was written to. So the last access time generally isn't that important. System restore in a VDI environment doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Take that a step forward. In our enterprise Windows desktop risk assessment for even physical clients, we don't recommend that enterprises rely on system state restore. The problem is that if the machine got infected and then the user can't boot at some point, they're going to restore back to where they had malware, and or they restore back too far and the machine doesn't have a domain password anymore. It's no longer a partner in the domain, right? The machine password's expired. So some issues there. We went through with our script and we disabled 36 scheduled tasks that do various things to Windows that just don't make any sense, like the customer experience part of Windows. Right, we don't need that dialing out on 4,000 VM hosts at midnight, trying to contact our servers to say, "Hey, you know, these guys had a crash in whatever." You know, that it just doesn't make any sense. So we turn things off that are safe, but you still want to just eyeball it and make sure it makes sense for your environment. And with that, talk about the resources that we have. This is old, Mr. Bennett. Wrote this, I think, in 2010, and never touched it again. So I reached out to him, I think, a year and a half ago and said, "Hey, you know, this is really cool, but we're seeing that we can do more than what this script actually does. Do you mind if we sort of inherit this, give you credit, of course, right, but inherit this thing and sort of make some recommendations from Microsoft stance?" Because what we were finding is customers were coming to us, particularly in field engineering, where they've implemented a solution for VDI, and then it breaks in some manner, and then we come on site, and it's like, "Well, geez, why did you do that?" "Well, the vendor told us to." "Well, that wasn't our recommendation." But then you turn around and say, "Well, where's Microsoft's recommendation on VDI?" "Well, we didn't really have one." So now we do. So yeah, we updated this for Windows 8, for Windows 7, tweaked it, and it's publicly available. This wiki is a list of all the different vendor recommendations for VDI environments. So if you're running Quest, for example, they have their own little recommendations for some of their things, VMware, Citrix, what have you. It's all going to be documented there. There are some consultants, some third-party consulting companies that have put their recommendations, what they like to do. But the bottom line is that when you call in with a problem, you don't want your whatever seat environment to be an unsupported stance from our phone guys, right? That's inconvenient. And the script's right there. And these are at the end in a resources slide also. So you'll have all that when you download the deck. No problem. And if you have recommendations, feel free to make those. We explain why we made certain choices. I respond to the comments in the blog, things like that. So there's also some configuration guides out there. I talked about those on the wiki. People's scripts, some white papers. We have some internal IP. We actually are baking a KB article on this that is somewhere in documentation land that PFE has written also. Did you want to cover this, or is it still me? Yeah. So basically what we're looking at is what's the footprint and available memory that we have, and it doesn't look like much when you do the optimization script versus not. But what we're also looking at is shutting off those timed instances of scheduled tasks that are going to beat your infrastructure into the ground at midnight, right? Or we're looking at things like, yeah, the memory footprint's about the same or a little bit better, but what happens when we write an I/O to the disk? How much latency do we have because we disabled filter drivers? Or how does the boot perform when we reboot a VDI environment, right? So if you follow the script, you'll see the machine boots a whole lot quicker. We were doing testing in our internal labs, and we had six all dedicated disks and all this stuff. So we're booting up the machines, doing a boot storm, and we did six iterations just to make sure that everything looked good. And the ones that had the script run were done and the reports were generated before we'd gotten to the third test run on the one that hadn't had the script generated on it. So you look at the difference in performance, it's quite huge when you look at particularly recycling those. I support an environment, they have about 65,000 seats in VDI, and most of theirs are actually non-persistent. So what they care about is when the user connects, that VM gets spun up and they connect to it. Well, that can take 7 or 8 minutes. Now it doesn't take nearly that long because we've optimized it. And then once it's done, we just throw it away anyway and save off the user profile, so we don't really care what happens to it afterwards. The average lifespan of my customers' VMs is about 7 days. Yeah? Yeah. That's true. Inventorying software, things that run scheduled tasks. I had a customer that was running Diskkeeper in their VDI environment. What? You don't think that's okay? You look at it, it's like, well, they meant well, you know? I mean, their heart's in the right place. It's just, you have the antivirus thing where, when it comes up, it does a full scan by default. If we're building a gold image and we scan that image, do we need to scan on reads off that golden image? I don't know. Depends on your security team, really, and how flexible they are. Right, if you go to the security guy and just say, we want to turn off scanning of reads on the VDI environment, they're probably going to blow a gasket. But if you explain to them it's already been scanned, right, then maybe they will kind of get where you're going with that. Yes? I don't think, yeah.
There was a. I'll go find the article. But Brian Madden had one of his guys produce a report assessing all of the antivirus tools, and Forefront 2010, granted it's a bit dated, was the most performant from their tests. Now, keep in mind, the question about whether or not to run antivirus inside your VDI environment is a multifaceted decision. It's not something you're just going to go out and say yes, no. But at the same time, if you are considering that, that might be an article, and I'll make certain that's in the resource list here.
Yep. Yeah. Yes? Yes.
Yeah, and there's a yeah. Right. There's an interesting component of that. Just disabling a service is not typically adequate enough, and so in other words, there's a GPO that you have to run to completely disable it.
Yep.
In a supported fashion.
Right.
Is that what the base recommendation without
any? Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right. It obviously you need to just make sure that it fits what you're going for, right, is the key. Another one is, I had a customer that thought they disabled defrag because they shut off the disk defragmentation service. Well, it hasn't shut off all the scheduled tasks that are calling defrag.exe, right? So, every 4.5 hours or whatever it is, oh my God, the disks are going through the roof. Why? Well, you have the scheduled task, and, unless you delete the executable or shut off the scheduled tasks, yeah. Yes?
Smart screen?
I like smart screen. I don't remember. I'd have to look.
Yeah, we don't do anything at this point. I think there's some fine tuning that we'll continue to make.
Yeah.
And make updates to that. But so smart screen as a function is a great idea, but it really depends on what access folks have inside of the VDI environment. I've worked with customers that don't allow anything but a set group of publicly available websites. They don't really want people to go out and use Facebook. But at the same time, there are many customers have open-ended.
Right, which is why it depends, right?
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea. Maybe. Maybe we will. Not a bad idea. It might be, yeah.
Remark on the antivirus.
Yeah.
On
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool, thank you.
Thanks,
so,
Thomas.
Performance tools.
Yeah, there's a lot. And so what we're going to talk about are some Microsoft tools and some third-party tools. And
yep.
So I want to make certain that you get a full breadth of what's out there, what's possible. So Jeff, you can start with talking about the Microsoft tools, XPerf, and all that stuff, since
sure.
You can get into the bits and bytes.
Has anyone, did anyone go to the how many coffees can you drink while your system sits there with a spinning donut? Yeah, right? I don't know what the official title was, but that's basically what it sums up to, right? So the tool he went over in there is called XPerf, right? Or Windows Performance Analyzer, WPA, et cetera, many names. So that's one of the things we would use. In the environment that I support, we actually stood up what's called a Windows Assessment Service Server, WAS, and we put the build into dedicated storage. We basically beat up an entire virtual host with 60 or 70 clones in it and looked at what is the impact of, say, upgrading DLP, right? Well, the vendor says to do it, but what's the impact of it? And we actually found some interesting things when we were doing that that made us push back on the security folks, and it turns out that they implemented the new version of DLP with no configuration options whatsoever except for the default. So it was taking about another 50 or 60 milliseconds in disk response time when you accessed your disks, right? And then Internet Explorer to render a site was taking up to a minute and a half, 2 minutes. And it's just any site, internal, external, whatever. Yes, it did. It was bad. But take that back. Okay, so you go to the security group. Oh, yeah, we forgot to do that. Okay, well, now we didn't push this change into production and affect 60,000 users. We affected nobody, right? So yay for us, right? So we have the Windows Performance Analyzer. We have the recorders, Windows Client Performance Kit. We've got the old school XPerf, Windows, what is it? WPR UI, Windows Performance Recorder UI. There's a command line version of it, which is GUI of it, rather. That's what we're looking at right here. The interesting thing with this is the graphic has everything checked. If you leave this with all the defaults, it collects so much information that generally I can, or an engineer that you call into, will be able to determine root cause. It's actually kind of rare you need to check these boxes. Because even though it says CPU or disk or whatever, when you don't have those checked, it's still going to collect some of that information because without, you know, understanding anything that's happening in disk, we're kind of flying blind, right? So these are more of deep dives into those sections. They also balloon the size of the trace that you're collecting and make it a little more difficult to analyze. Note, if you're doing 64-bit for your guests, you have to disable paging executive. It's a registry key. By default, Windows 7, not 8, needs this key set so you can run the verbose mode. Or if you don't want to set that registry key, what it does is it basically forces kernel to load more memory, load more of the binaries into memory instead of paging it out. If you don't set that key, then you can just drop down from verbose to light. It'll still collect a heck of a lot of information, enough to figure out what's going on. We can do transition states. We can do off-on, sleep for physicals. I have a blog post on this. There's a smaller version of this called the Windows Performance Toolkit, where you go in and without building a SQL server and having infrastructure and things like that, you can actually just fire up this guy and have it go and do some collections on machines and find out, like we used it in a physical environment. I know this is a little off topic, but we used a physical environment. Was the SSD worth buying in this model? That's hard to enumerate, right? Well, yeah, it goes faster, but how much faster? Was it worth it? Was it worth it going from 7200 to SSD? Well, it was, but you know, it lets the bean counters actually justify the expenses of what's going on here, right? Same type of thing, what version of antivirus should we be using? You know, which third party should we engage with? Do we want to pay for the discrete video card and see if Windows 8 can render the modern applications better with a discrete video card versus just emulating video memory out of our system memory? We can answer those types of questions. So this looks really confusing, but basically you're looking at CPU consumption, storage, DPCs for bad drivers, things like that. It has a learning curve, but there's a lot of Channel 9 content on this about how to analyze this, and then PFE and I think even MCS teach classes on how to use this tool set if you want to get deep into it. And you know, this is more for your notes, just kind of explains what it's doing. Some security folks are a little concerned, hey, what are you collecting? We are collecting some information. In these traces, I'll see things like, what's the name of the share we're running a logon script from? What's the name of that script? What's the name of your GPOs? What's the name of the user and the domain and the machine name? Yeah, those are all in the trace. The password, not really so much, right? Those types of things are still encrypted and whatnot. But there is some personal identifiable information in these traces. What I like, and I'll get to it in just a second here. Yeah, see, we're going into the dynamics of how all this works. This is the cool part. In a VDI environment that I support, what we do is we run a black box, like on airplanes, and we give the user a button that they can go in and click to shut down that trace. So if they had something that happened, like an app crashed, or something hung, you know, they went and clicked on an email in Outlook and it took 3.5 minutes to open. Well, that annoys people, right? And they want to know why. So after that thing recovers, they click the button, it stops the trace that's running in the background all the time, and we have a black box of what happened the last 5 minutes on the machine. That's not bad. That's a lot better than saying, well, the next time it happens, let me know, right? I mean, that's a nightmare. If we're collecting the data, and the footprint on this is about 4 megabytes of RAM and a 250 meg file. Not too bad. You can also do the same thing with NetSH tracing, where you do black box tracing in a circular mode, and then you'll have the whole conversation. What happened at the kernel, the user mode, and the network stack? Everything will be in there. And that's what we do. The traces that come out of the network, the NetSH, look like, well, if you open them with the Windows Performance Analyzer, they're going to be a little difficult to digest. But if you open them with the actual Netmon 3.4, it'll digest those, and it'll look like any other Netmon trace. So it'll give you basically everything you're used to looking at in a Netmon and more. For legacy machines, we can also use the Visual Round Trip Analyzer. It's more of just an FYI troubleshooting. And then some people don't know that in IE10, if you hit F12, you can actually profile the network stack in the browser. So we've had that where users are hitting like an internal app, like a SharePoint site, and it takes forever to load a particular dashboard. Well, this will tell you why.
What's the root cause of the performance? What's taking so long?
Right. Yeah. Where's the delay? Where's the hang? We'll see it.
So we want to talk about a couple vendor-provided support tools before we get into the demo of one of them. And there's some context here that we want to provide you. So, you know, the XPerf tool, well, great for troubleshooting, and obviously there's a learning curve associated with it. We want to make certain you're aware of what's out there from good partners with ours to make certain you're aware of what they can do, what their capabilities are, what the limitations are, et cetera. So there's two prominent ones. The first is Lakeside that we'll talk about very briefly here, and then we'll talk about Login VSI. So Lakeside is a tool that helps us understand what's going on in an existing environment that's running on a physical machine before we consider moving it. So what you see here is details that are collected, and you go out and collect this with the client tool to see what kind of connection you've got. What you see there in that yellow box in the middle is basically the machine, and then all of its connections out. So you've got a connection to their H drive, to their P drive. You see some latency details associated with each of those connections. So this is kind of interesting because you get all this information that you wouldn't otherwise have. Now, what it also provides you that as a result is material that says good candidate for VDI or not. And it's not necessarily a red, green, yellow, but it's more of a, here is a group of users that you would consider well-suited for VDI. Too many times I've worked with customers, and this thinking of one particular retailer that I'm working with today, they're on their sixth iteration of a VDI environment because the first several that they've built weren't performance optimized. They simply went with vendor-provided recommendations for infrastructure, for hardware, for SAN, and it wasn't optimized to accommodate that. And so, you know, in the absence of tools, they were running pretty blind as to what's going on. Let's now talk about where Login VSI fits in that equation. So Login VSI is going to help us focus on optimizing that virtual environment before we run it to production. So we're not in a position here of saying, what is it that runs in my environment, and does it run it good virtually? What we're talking about is using the tools to be able to assess that. And so using their VSI Max tool, what you get is reports that show you where the spikes are, where the issues might lie, and then you can go tweak and rerun these assessments. So the idea here is to help optimize your environment to be able to run your VDI as in the most efficient manner possible. I'm going to switch over to my demo box here that's been pre-baked. What we have here, and let me explain it briefly, is the login VSI console environment is where we set up the test that we're going to run. And then in order for it to run, and you see this RDP session that I've got running, is actually running an assessment schedule in the background. So it's running through multiple tasks, multiple times, it's producing results, and from those results I can pull data out and say, what's the latency between action A and action B, but then also, most more importantly, what's the overall user experience going to look like? I can then go and evaluate that against what I've got in my configuration and make changes to things such as the office suite, IE, et cetera, and understand what that impact is going to be from a performance perspective before we roll it to a production environment. So we did this before, and I've got both an environment that was run within just a generic out-of-the-shelf Windows 8 VDI machine, and then I've also got one that we built out after we ran Jeff's script. And so let's pull that up. Oops. Analyzer, run. Compare wizard. And so you see the difference in gaps here of the before and after. And it's fairly significant. You know, this is a chart showing response time in milliseconds. And a lot of this is due to the fact that we've turned services off, we've turned performance in, and we've tweaked performance. It's likely that you're going to see a different graph based on your environment. You may already have some of those enabled or disabled. But what we're looking for here is obviously optimizing the response time and being able to reduce that into such a way that you go into the production environment without a machine that has a fundamental flaw in the performance. So I want to make certain that you're aware of capabilities and tools from third parties. Also want to make certain that you're aware of what's going on in this space and what's happening inside of the VDI environment if you've not already been familiar with it. But also, you know, finally, we want to talk about some of the specific recommendations that we've had from past. Now, if you've seen this content before, and we'll jump to Q&A on the topics in general here in just a minute. If you've seen this topic before, I apologize, but we've got some content here I want to make certain we run through very briefly. And it has to do with the use of these configuration tables. Now, if you went to Mike Mikkel's session earlier this week, you saw the content in a similar fashion. We spent a lot of time, Jeff and I and others, working through this sheet. And we built out this list with the certainty that disabling a service would not cause impact from a service perspective. You know, where it says to disable, that's a strong recommendation that you should be disabling that service, even if it is identified as manual or manual with a triggered start. Also, when it says consider, you should consider disabling that service when it's something that is not something that you use in your environment. So branch cache, for example, that may or may not be something of importance. As we wrap up some of these, I want to make certain we highlight a few of them that we pointed out. And the first one was just the offline files. So offline files is an interesting one. Jeff, maybe you can point out some things that you've been experienced with there.
Yeah, the interesting thing with the offline files is, let me see if we have the notes there for it. Yeah, requires GPO. What we found is that if you disable the offline file service, it doesn't quite do everything that should be happening in the profile load, and you'll end up breaking things like roaming profiles and whatnot to some extent, or at least you have a potential to. So we would advise, basically from the product group, they looked at what we were doing and said, yeah, for that one you need to use this GPO. And so we actually list the GPO, hey, you need to go do this. That's on the blog. So with that one, Yeah, that's one in particular that if you just disable the service, and a lot of people actually do, will disable it because it's like, well, I don't need offline files in a VDI environment. Well, then you might break things like GPO processing and profile loads and things like that. And trying to get to the root cause of a case like that is not something I would wish on an enemy, you know, in terms of time spent on a phone or having a crit sit and a manager yelling at you. So, yeah, that's definitely the way to do it. The other one that was interesting is the Bluetooth service. We found that my customer, and we recommend you shut this off, right, because who's going to be using Bluetooth in a VDI environment? There are some consumer-level printers that you have to, you know, load the driver for and whatnot that they require that service. Who knew, right? We're not pairing over Bluetooth at all because it's virtual, but yeah. But that's why you just test, vet it out.
Another one that I wanted to point out here that was highlighted as being automatic. So instead of disabling it, is turn it to automatic is network list services. So if you haven't even worked with Windows 8 for any period of time on physical machines or virtual machines, you may have noticed a bit of a lag when you're switching networks. And that's because by default out of the box when you start Windows 8, the network list services is not running. It'll kick in after a period of time, but by setting it to automatic, you eliminate that lag.
Right, that applies to 7 as well.
There was a hotfix made available for that that just basically turned the service to automatic. And then the last one there was Windows Defender, which was already mentioned, and again, there's a GPO that's required for that. So that just summarizes very briefly. I know some of this has been perhaps covered already, but summarizes very briefly the work associated with building this list. You know, this wasn't just some guy in a room saying, I don't know what this does, let's turn it off. It was focused test, focused review, and results then for you to take forward, and that's where that script was built from. So with that, I want to make certain we have the opportunity for Q&A, and so if you have a question, please come up to the mic and ask it. Certainly understand we're the ones standing between you and Beer 30, but also want to highlight the fact that we've got a couple folks from Login VSI here. So if you have questions about what you saw or specific questions about what you're looking for, both Omar and Franz are available for your questions either now directly or after the session. So
one thing I wanted to add, in terms of troubleshooting, one of the things that we found real handy in VDI, and this applies to both Hyper-V and VMware, is that there are tools available, capabilities available, where you can take a snap of, say, a hung VM. That's one of the things that I end up troubleshooting a lot is where the VM just stops responding, right? That's annoying. It frustrates the user. So what we do is we end up taking that VM and putting it off to the side, taking a snapshot of it, and then we convert that snapshot to a dump file and analyze it. And there's tools for that for both VMware and for Hyper-V. It's documented on how to convert those. So essentially what you're doing is you're snapping, right, that VM and then just convert it to a .dmp file, which is quite handy.
So what questions do you have and things that you've run across either with your existing environment, challenges that you're running across that you don't know how to address? Perhaps we can address those here in the context of the team.
Anyone? Don't be shy. It's all good.
Yeah, on the DirectX topic. Yeah.
The user will most likely never use the feature that's requiring this.
Right.
But the application will let us even install it in the VDI environment because it can't detect it.
Right.
You know, I actually haven't worked with Movie Maker inside of VDI, so I can't directly speak
Photoshop.
To it. But Photoshop definitely.
Three filters that won't work, but if you're not careful how you install it, it won't let you install it because of those three filters.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
That is a good question. I want to tinker and find out, actually. Yeah.
Certainly touch points.
Yeah, there's been some stuff that I've seen on Brian Madden and others that refer to that. We have not taken the time yet to do any performance optimization for that, but there's probably some things that we should look at changing there when we go to VDI.
So is it within IE specifically that you're noticing it, or is it just a silver light in general? Okay. Make certain you touch base afterwards. We'll get contact information.
I'm interested.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that's interesting is we look at the CPU emulated video. You guys remember back when Castle Wolfenstein first came out, not the remake, but the actual real one, where you're going around and you're sort of in a 3D environment of boxes, right? So we're sort of going back to that where we're software emulating a 3D device, right? And then you got that first, you're the first guy on the block with the Voodoo card and you could actually do 3D acceleration. I don't know if anyone's had that fun, but I actually could run circles around the guys I was fighting in Quake. They're trying to turn and I'm just running circles around. It was like being Predator, it was awesome. But yeah, it's cool that they, we're kind of going back to that. Well, let's just emulate the GPU, why not? Because not every machine has the slots needed to put all those video cards in it and in the power, right? What else?
Yes, yeah. Please.
For the people who want to do the tests that you just saw, you want to do them in your own environment, with all the design, your own pre-license for everybody in the room.
Yeah. Cool.
Yes, thanks. I appreciate that, friends.
Who doesn't like cool graphs?
Now, the one thing that I would point out that when we ran this, we ran it just on physical on individual virtual machines. The way the product is designed, it's really designed to run against your virtual environment that you have, whether you have multiple pods or multiple server infrastructure. So it'll run against all of those, and you'll get much more granular details than what I showed on the graph there.
Got a question over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually have a comment on that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So yeah, repeating the question. So his question is that in medical, like doing radiology, they don't really make good VDI candidates necessarily because they require a specific driver, right? And what I've actually seen is I used to support a hospital and they were doing VDI and they couldn't do that because basically they had to use a special video card and the people who made the video card, it was like a $4,000 video card, and it had ATI chips on it, and ATI provided them the SDK, and they wrote their own driver. So no, we probably can't stuff that into VDI, right? And boy, did it blue screen a lot. That was a nightmare. Yeah. It can, yes.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you need to test your use case, right? And using some of this software where we can actually go in and say, okay, who do we think might be a good customer of this infrastructure, right? That's going to help succeed the project, I did a talk last year at TechEd where I talked about the enterprise and, how you can spend millions of dollars on a SAN and network infrastructure and consultants and this and that and blah, 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 and T3s and OC4s or whatever. But it all boils down to that $450 laptop you nickel and dimed our OEM for, doesn't it? I mean, if it takes 9.5 minutes for that guy to log into the machine, he's going to hate his job. And me.
And you.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is. But I think we, I did a Windows desktop risk assessment where I went on site and literally it was taking about 17 minutes for the guys to log in. And they were very proud that they had nickel and dimed the OEM to reduce the cost of the laptop to about $420 per hardware piece, right? So yeah, I mean, you're getting what you paid for. I mean, I can't make this Celeron into a Core i5. I just, I'd love to, but we're not there yet. Yeah. Yeah, you can do that. The spanning, yeah. long as you're running the newer RDC.
So again, on that topic, these are the ones that are certified by Microsoft, actually not by Microsoft, by our third-party certification vendor, to work inside of Windows Server 2012 with the WDDM driver. So again, if we go out and we download the NVIDIA Quadro 4000 and we put that particular video driver on it, it's not going to be certified. It may work, but it's certainly not recommended.
Or tested.
Or tested.
Yeah.
And I expect this to grow, but at this point, this is where we're at today.
Yeah. Someone else? I thought I heard someone starting to talk. Oh, well, thank you. Did you hear that?
No.
Eight with a video, with a VG, with GPU. Yeah.
Software, okay.
Yeah.
So up to 16 then with software virtualization.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry.
Go ahead and stand and use a microphone, Adam.
Yeah, feel free.
I never put a mic in my hand. So he's got the numbers up there. We support up to 8 monitors with the vGPU, and the synthetic GPU, the software GPU, will go up to 16.
I don't know if I have 16 monitors in my house.
And this is also actually, if you've got applications that want a minimum amount of video RAM in order to install or in order to run, by cranking this up to the maximum resolution and the maximum number of monitors, that's how we allocate video RAM to a VM. So just pick the maximum numbers there, and that gives you 268 megabytes of VRAM, which is the most we support for a GPU.
Any other questions? Situations you've encountered, things that you just really don't understand. How many of, I think we did this poll before, but just a quick show of hands, how many are running VDI today with Windows 7 or Windows XP? Okay. How many are planning to do a Windows 8 VDI or at least exploring that? Okay. Several. How many are also looking at the Citrix Excalibur or Zen Desktop now to include with that? So size of the environment is a key component here, and I'll probably mess this up, but the general message from Microsoft right now is if you're looking at a Microsoft-only product for VDI, we do have some numbers limitations, and we'll talk about what those are if you have questions about that. But the reasons to consider Citrix are certainly wide and varied, and we strongly support our partnership with them, especially if you're using third-party devices. So,
yeah. But yeah, we have, is in the deck, is the native Microsoft stack of 2,000 seats. So performance stuff, configuration, things like that.
Yep. Well, that's what we had today. Certainly appreciate your specific feedback and concerns, and would love to have you, we provided some highlights here as to some other content that you might look at. The session that was presented earlier this week, tuning images for VDI. We wanted to talk about the designing of VDI architecture for scale and performance, so you can go ahead and watch these since most of them have already been produced. And then there's a hands-on lab if you have some spare cycles tonight or tomorrow to go look at that. The VDI Smackdown, I'll just highlight this. That's probably one of the most informative sessions that I've been to. So if you haven't had a chance to get to it, make certain you go watch the video later and review the material. There's a lot of good information there about the three different main three different products. Of course, there's certainly others that are being considered, but you know, there's no question about it that Microsoft is not a market leader in this space today, but we have opportunities for us to move from where we are to forward, and so we're looking to do that effectively in a measured fashion.
I think the official answer is,
well, we have Adam Carter here as the program manager for VDI, so he'd be happy to give you an answer on that.
Yeah, I'm Adam. I'm the product manager for VDI. And that is one question. Every time I do a session in the last 2 years, that's always one of the questions I get is, what are you guys doing for non-Windows clients? The answer is, we make great Windows clients. We license the RDP protocol to third parties and let them develop clients. The VDI Smackdown session actually Ruben spent some time today, and he talked about, and in his the white paper report, he kind of has his findings on which are the best of the third-party clients out there.
His findings were that they don't make it.
Yeah, his findings were none of them are as good as the Windows clients. It's feedback that we get a lot, and it's right now our position is to continue making that it's partner space for us. We license the protocol, let partners do that. I know that's not the answer you wanted.
Yeah, I imagine Citrix does like that answer. Well, thanks, y'all. We appreciate it. Y'all have a good night.